This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
Do you know what ad I used to love?
What?
Do you remember the cats with the...
Was it for milk?
I think, was it Cravendale? It was a British brand, I think.
British? Yeah.
British.
You'd got one with nail file.
Yeah.
Filing its nails.
Love that little fucker.
I can't remember the others.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, they were doing the...
It was something like... So.
From the musical.
Oh no, hang on. We might be crossing out West Side Story you're thinking of, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we might be crossing over. Was Cravendale not the one where it's so good the cows want it back? Did you remember?
I never said Cravendale. You did.
Okay, well, I might be crossing over. Wasn't there one where like cows are like, you know...
Yeah, they want it back.
Rain people's gaffs and shit. They're showing up in their garden.
Yeah.
That was a good one as well.
Another good one with cats. I don't know if anyone else will remember this, but I know Brits will.
Sing it.
I want some Crusher. That stuff was fucking gold dust.
I've actually never had it. Wasn't it like just milk with like sweet flavours added to it?
No.
Oh.
Well, yeah. So you'd buy...
Absolutely not.
You'd
yes.
buy a bottle. So like my favourite were raspberry.
Mm.
There were raspberry, chocolate, mint, strawberry. Ugh. But yeah, my favourite were raspberry. And you'd buy a bottle of this raspberry.
Mm-hmm.
You'd pour that in a glass and then top the glass up with milk.
Oh, okay.
And stir it.
I remembered the ads, yeah. Yeah.
That raspberry milk?
I thought it was a standalone product.
No. Oh my God. That raspberry crusher. I don't think you can get it anymore. But yeah, no, the ad. I'm pretty sure that were cats.
I want some
crusher. It was. It was like a cat. Like, how do I describe it? It was like just a picture of a cat and they just move it back and forth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It wasn't like a full on animation.
Its legs would just move. Yeah.
That was a great ad. Fuck. Do you know one I loved as well? I've got another one. Got one for you.
Go on.
I don't know if this was in the UK or if it was just Ireland. It was a Luke's-Aid ad and it was all zombies. It was zombies playing sport and shit.
I don't remember that.
No.
Do you know what I do remember?
Well, look it up. It's funny.
Another song.
Not funny.
And once I say this, it'll be stuck in your head.
What?
Belly's gonna get you. Belly's gonna get you.
No, I don't. No, you showed that to me years ago, but I don't remember it.
How?
I don't think it was on telly over here. Was it? I think it was a British ad.
It was Nike. It was about go out for a run, lose weight, or the belly's gonna get you.
Jesus Christ.
And ads it was are great, just a big fucking belly. Bouncing around the fucking city.
They don't make them like they used to, do they?
No, they don't.
Anyway, we are back for part two of the Radium Girls.
Mm.
When we listened to it back, I noticed that Neil seemed to kind of get a little bit quieter during it. And I said, like, what's wrong? What's up with you? And you're like, I just find it a bit heavy. All the...
It was really sad what was happening to the women.
Yeah, and I think the difference between me and you is I know the outcome of it. I find it a very interesting story, knowing what happened, what it caused.
Yeah.
Whereas Neil was sat there just listening to these poor women.
It weren't
their bodies are disintegrating.
It wasn't just the physical side of it. It was the disrespect of trying to put it down to fucking clap and stuff like really
syphilis.
Trying to... Yeah, okay. really trying to dull it down
disrespect
them.
Yeah. Discredit what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, it's not only discredit, but they're trying to... It's basically their way of calling them whores.
Mm.
And dirty. Like, I don't know. I just found it a bit rough.
Well, I'm sorry for that.
So I'm actually looking forward to this week because you said we're going to be talking about the trial. So hopefully we're going to see these evil bastards pay.
Well, we'll just jump straight into it. And we are straight away getting into the trial. Oh, hang on. Should we do a little recap bit? We should do a little recap bit.
You're very unorganised.
I am. So before we jump back into the case, a little recap.
Let's distraught Neil again.
So we talked about, you know, when radium was first discovered and how it was promoted as this miracle product to drink, to apply to your skin, how the women in the factory and they're working there, they were told this was great, good. It's not going to harm you.
You swallow a bit, it'll make your cheeks rosy.
Exactly. What else was there? The women would actually, because they thought it was safe, would use it as a cosmetic product. They would paint their nails, paint their teeth. They would have it on their dresses to get that luminous glow. And then we start to talk about just how fucking dangerous and how serious the effects of radium were. By 1927, over 50 women had died from radium poisoning.
Yeah.
So in that same year, 1927, five former dial painters from the New Jersey factory filed a lawsuit against their former employer. It was Radium Dial.
No shit.
These women were Catherine Schwab, Grace Fryer, Keinta Maggia McDonald, Albina Maggia Larice, and Edna Huseman. It took the women 2 years to find a lawyer that would represent them. But they did, and his name was Raymond Berry.
So is that because they were like, you've got no chance of winning, or they were like, fuck that, I'm not touching that?
I think it was a bit of both. It's hard to prove it, and you're going up against this fucking powerhouse of a company, you know? So, good man Raymond, he's going to represent them.
Raymond. Hey, Ray's here, ha ha!
Oh my God, please leave that in. So, the trial will begin in 1928. But by this stage, these women were extremely ill. Two of them were already bedridden, and the others struggled to even raise their hands to take their oath, with one of the women needing a back brace just to sit up in her chair.
Fucking hell.
Now, the company tried to delay the trial with various tactics. Basically, they were hoping that these women would die before it actually even go to trial. Fucking scum.
Yeah.
Their lawyer... I can't even say Raymond now. Their lawyer, Raymond Berry, sought help from physicist Elizabeth Hughes. Elizabeth was a former lab assistant in the radium section of NIST, at the time called National Bureau of Standards. She testified that all workers should be protected from the exposure of radium. She also said that at other research institutes, scientists were told about the safety precautions and how to follow them. So obviously the defense just thought, fuck it, I know what to do. Let's try and discredit her and say that her findings are insignificant.
Because she's a woman.
I'd say that was a chunk of it, yeah. Elizabeth acknowledged that she was currently a housewife and hadn't worked full-time in a lab for the past 5 years, but still maintained that her research provided the aspect of quality, not quantity, when it came to results. And the judge clearly thought so because he interjected the defence and asked Elizabeth to further explain her research. So she described the breath tests that she had conducted and how they were able to prove that these women's breath was toxic. Elizabeth proceeded to describe the procedure for collecting the samples. So basically the process for collecting the breaths was for 5 minutes, each woman would breathe through a series of containers.
Uh-huh.
And the containers contained calcium chloride to remove moisture, glass wool to remove dust, and sulfuric acid to trap any other chemicals. So basically it allowed only air and gas radon to be collected for analysis. So as their breath accumulated and they're able to collect the samples, Elizabeth was able to come to the conclusion that the women had ingested so much radium that their breath was now toxic. Quote, Elizabeth Damon Hughes was an unsung heroine in the saga of the Radium Dial Painters. She made the critical measurements that helped them win their day in court. And you know, like we were saying earlier, this case was a massive undertaking. They were going up against a powerhouse.
Yeah.
The women were seeking $250,000 in damages each. But in the end, the women would agree to a settlement. Each woman was awarded $10,000 in damages, a further $600 each year for the rest of their lives, and all of their medical and legal expenses to be paid for them.
Which... doesn't sound too bad, but how long have they got left to live?
Exactly. Exactly. They're all on their last legs kind of thing. Their health is fucked at this point.
So they should say it can continue on to their family members.
Yeah. And I mean, that is something that comes up about the payments afterwards. Now, in 1938, five more women filed a lawsuit against their former employer.
Who was the employer?
Fucking Radium Dial. Who other? So these were the women from the Chicago factory. These women would be known in the media as the Society of the Living Dead. Leonard Grossman would represent these women in court. He said that because these women were quite poor, he would also do so free of charge.
Oh.
Yeah.
You would not get that now.
No, you would not.
No, you seriously, like, you're taking the piss. No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. Of course you wouldn't.
Even the no-win, no-fee, they fucking fleece you.
He argued that Radium Dial had denied them an access to their medical examination results, that they had not produced any witnesses to contradict the testimonies of the former Dial painters, and that they had admitted that radium was poisonous, but then they would deny that fact. Just flip-flopping bastards.
Hmm.
He described the company as a predator, and he said that the radium would bombard through Catherine's very casket like it wrecked and destroyed her jawbone and her hip. When I read that, I was like, I bet he was like fucking screaming that in the courtroom.
Yeah.
That seemed like one of those like fist pump moments, you know what I mean? Yeah. According to a testimony from Catherine, one of the Dial painters, when she and other co-workers asked her supervisor, Rufus Reed, why the company didn't give the results of the physical examinations, he said, "My dear girls, if we were to give a medical report to you girls, there would be a riot in the place."
Why?
Exactly. Fucking dick.
Why? Like, why?
I don't know if you're more angry by the fact that you didn't get them or that he said that.
Yeah.
But again, we're kind of living back in the time there of women are hysterical and, yeah. The women would go on to win the case and, financially speaking, not a massive win.
Same again.
This time, the women were only awarded 10,000 to be divided between them.
And how many of them?
It was another 5 women.
5.
And the reason being, these scumbags had shut up shop in Illinois and moved to New York. And they just weren't going to cross state lines to gain the assets of the company, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was more of a funding issue or an issue of jurisdiction or possibly both. But either way, these women got shafted.
Yeah.
Something else to bear in mind, these women didn't have the full support of their community either. There was a lot of people who just wanted this to sort of go away.
They didn't give a shit.
Yeah, because at the end of the day to them, they saw this company as doing wonders for their area. They were creating jobs and well-paying jobs at that.
Yeah, but it comes at a price.
It fucking does come at a price, yeah. So Radium Dial did try an appeal several times. Luckily, though, they were unsuccessful. Leonard Grossman's son has since spoke about his father and how important workers' rights were to him. He was very passionate about helping these women. He recalled his father talking about how frail Catherine had become and the strength that came from the support of the other women. So although, Neil, you were feeling very, morbidly depressed from the story?
Yeah.
These women...
Still am. Like, they're not really getting anything from it.
It is horrific how these women were treated.
Yeah.
You know, no two ways about it. But these women were instrumental in the movement that implemented the Occupational Safety and Health Administration Act. And in 1949, a bill was passed that would guarantee compensation for occupational diseases, as well as extending the statute of limitations. It's incredibly important that their story be told, and to remember that these young women, many newlyweds or with young children, had to have their lives taken from them in an extremely cruel and devastating manner for us to really get it.
Yeah, because one of them was only 18 when she started.
Mm. There was youngers there, which we were going to talk about some more of the women. But there was kids, you know, young teenagers. According to Kate Moore, author of The Radium Girls, it's likely that there were thousands of Dial painters whose deaths can be attributed to radium poisoning. But there's no definitive number. So let's take a quick look at a few of the radium girls that we do know of. Molly, who we talked about earlier, she was the first radium girl we brought up.
Yeah.
Molly was born on the 21st of December, 1897. Born to Italian immigrant parents, Molly was one of 7 girls.
Fucking hell.
Do you know, there's so many larger families that we're going to talk about here. It's fucking insane.
Yeah, but imagine them all being girls.
Too much fucking drama for you.
Hell.
Well, 3 of her sisters were also Dial painters. Molly was said to have been an exceptional Dial painter, and she was the first Dial painter to have succumbed to the effects of radium. Albina Magillaris, born on the 15th of August, Albina was Molly's sister. Her nickname was Bina, and she was tiny. She was only 4'8".
Bina.
Bina. Albina was one of the women who made history when she and four others filed a lawsuit against the United States Radium Corporation. And she was considered to have been one of the more seriously affected at the time of the trial. Quinta Maggia MacDonald. Quinta was born on Valentine's Day, and I'm sure you've guessed it, she was Molly and Albina's sister. Her name came from her being the fifth born to her parents, but she would usually just go by the nickname May. I'm not quite sure why May, but...
Because it's easier to say, and May's the fifth month. She was named after the number five because she was the fifth child.
Mm.
So they must have thought, we'll just call her May.
Yeah. You've cracked Makes the sense. Code.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Quinta said that she was initially attracted to the position because it was good pay and fast work. She also said that she felt lucky that she got to work with her sisters.
Sorry. Just in case anyone missed that, that was my Columbo impression. people would be like, what the fuck is he?
Is he having a stroke? Quinta was married and she also had two children, Helen and Robert. Unfortunately, though, her husband was said to have been abusive towards her, even going as far as threatening to kill her and hitting her while she was extremely unwell.
So he literally kicked her while she was down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if he literally kicked her. But
no, but, you know, I always say, fucking hell, kick her while she's down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's overkill for abuse.
Although it was said that they did reconcile later. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Did she have much say in that?
Well, I mean, could it have been one of those... This is all speculation, by the way. I don't fucking know what their situation was. Was it one of those things that because she was dying and they had two
That's
kids...
What I mean. Did she have much choice?
Yeah. Catherine Schwab.
Slob.
Schwab.
Schwab.
Catherine was...
What's wrong?
No. Catherine Schwab. Catherine was born on the 10th of March, 1902. To parents Mary and William Schwab. One of three daughters and a son, Catherine actually began working at the factory when she was just 14 years old and would go on to become an instructress.
What?
An instructress.
What the fuck's that?
An instructor because she's female. Has to be S, doesn't it? Instructress. Described as imaginative, Catherine had hopes of becoming a writer. She did write a memoir and an excerpt from that was published. But the complete manuscript was destroyed by her family.
Why?
What was in there? Yeah, what was in there that they destroyed it? Huh? Gives the goss. Marguerite Carlo. Born on the 6th of March, 1901, Marguerite was the baby of the family. At the age of 23, Marguerite was the first dial painter to file against the Radium Corporation. Because of her actions, lip pointing was banned at the Waterbury Clock Company. So... she pretty much saved a shit ton of women from the horrors that these other women had to deal with.
Yeah.
Sarah Carlo Mayfair. Sarah was Marguerite's older sister. She was a single mother and lived with her parents. Sarah became a single mother when her husband Henry just fucked off one day and didn't come back.
We do that.
So after her husband left, she went on to live with her parents. Sarah was the first noted dial painter in history to have tested positive for radium poisoning, as well as the first to be autopsied. Edna Huseman. Edna was born in May of 1901 to an English mother and an American father.
Here we go, we're coming in now. Rule Britannia.
Edna was said to have loved flowers and was a big music fan. Edna and Catherine had actually worked together in multiple factories. Do you remember the pathologist Harrison Martland?
Yeah.
Who mentioned him earlier, he was able to prove it.
Yeah.
She actually wrote a thank you letter to him, and she wrote in the corner of it, just in case he didn't remember her name, radium patient. It's kind of sad, but bless her, you know what I mean? Grace Fryer. Grace was born on the 14th of March in 1899. Grace was one of 11 kids.
Fucking hell.
I know, her mother must have been exhausted.
Could she walk? Like, give her a fucking rest.
Get off of her! It was said of her childhood, Grace was not pampered, nor had she been taught to think first of her own happiness.
I know the feeling well.
Her younger sister, Adelaide, was also a dial painter, but she got the sack for yapping too much.
I can believe that.
Their brother said, "I always thought it was funny. The person who did the wrong thing supposedly ended up living to be an old lady." That's fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Grace was described as highly intelligent, extremely capable, and she was very enthusiastic about politics. Eleanor Ella Eckhart. Ella was born on the 10th of December, 1895, and she was one of 9 children.
Can tell they've got the Irish genes in them.
In 1923, she gave birth to her son, Sonny. But as she wasn't married and it was, you know, 1923, she kept her child a secret. Ella's cause of death was listed as shock from operation. The reality was that Ella had died from bone cancer. Harrison Martland made sure that her cause of death was changed to radium poisoning. Good man, Harrison.
Yeah. So all them who were put down as syphilis, was theirs changed?
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't answer definitively. Ella's son was just 4 years old when she died. And after her death, compensation was to be paid towards her son, but there's no evidence of any payout. So that's some of the dial painters from the New Jersey factory. We'll take a look at some of the workers from Illinois now. Pearl Payne. Pearl was born on the 8th of March 1900 to Polish immigrants. Pearl was the eldest of 13 children, and unfortunately, some of her siblings had died in infancy. At the age of 13, Pearl left school to join the workforce. But fair fucks to her, she did return to education later and became a nurse.
Oh, good on her.
Described as polite and unobtrusive, it stunned her family when she stood up for herself and the other workers by joining the lawsuit against her former employer. It seemed as though her main objective was not to do this because of what had happened to her, but because she couldn't bear to see her friends and co-workers be treated in such a callous manner.
Yeah.
She was also said to have had a strong bond with Catherine Wolfe, and she was also the one who suggested to their lawyer, Leonard Grossman, that they could be used to help other workers dealing with occupational hazards by forming a society. Now, Pearl met her husband at the age of 16, and it was said that she, quote, kept company with him until the age of 21, when they would marry. Yeah, it doesn't sound great, does it?
No, it doesn't sound good at all.
I don't like that.
It's a bit like Tiger and fucking... What's she called? Summit Jenner?
Kylie Jenner, Kylie when he Jenner. Said they were just friends until she turned 18.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. They had one daughter together named Pearl Charlotte. Now, Pearl loved a bit of sewing, and apparently she was fucking deadly at cooking. And it was said that she... This is where I'm happy here. I agree with Pearl, okay? Mm. It was said that she always used butter and never margarine. You know I feel very strongly about this issue. Always butter.
No. Margarine's better for cakes.
Why?
It's easier.
No, why is it better though? We're talking about flavour, final result. Now it's easier on your weak little fucking wrist trying to stir it.
Can you telling me when you're eating a cake, you can go, oh, I can taste the butter.
Yes, absolutely. You can tell the difference. In summation, Pearl was a fucking G. She was fucking all about with the butter and she was standing up for her fucking friends.
And she clearly had strong wrists.
Yes, she was fucking brilliant. Why do we sound so angry about it? Frances Glasinski O'Donnell. Frances began working as a dial painter in 1922 when she was just 15 and she left in 1925. She was married with 3 children. Frances' sister Marguerite, she also worked at the factory with her and she started working there in 1924. But she would leave later on in 1931, and Marguerite had one son. The two sisters also worked in the same room as Catherine Wolfe Donoghue. Frances and Marguerite were also involved in the lawsuit, but it was said that they didn't seem quite as passionate about it as some of the other women. In a letter Catherine wrote to Pearl Payne, Catherine talks about how some of the girls had come to see her, and had also gone together to get their x-rays taken, but that the sisters had refused to go. I don't know if that was shade or just like an observation. And was it the girls didn't care as much or just that they couldn't cope with being around people affected by the same thing? You know what I mean? Either way, Frances and Marguerite did go on to see old age. Frances died in 1977 and Marguerite in 1981.
Canal.
Marie Becker Rossiter. Marie had a hard upbringing. She grew up in poverty and her father had died from dropsy when she was young. I didn't know what the hell that was. Apparently it's edema.
Okay.
Her mother would go on to remarry and her stepfather would send her to work at the age of 13. Marie was described as having a fierce, I can do it attitude, which her grandmother said came from her struggles in her earlier life. Marie worked various jobs before ending up as a dial painter, where she stayed for 7 years. Marie would go on to marry and have a son named William. She was said to have been funny, witty, and charismatic, and a brilliant storyteller. She loved to cook, and she was a hooer for cats. She sat by Catherine as she was bedridden and helped to care for her. When the workers in Illinois heard the news of what was going on in New Jersey, Marie had no fear in approaching her supervisor and demanded answer as to what the fuck was going on. So basically, Marie was just another fucking G. She didn't give a fuck. Peg Looney. Peg was the eldest out of 10 kids. She was good friends with Catherine and Marie. Peg was engaged to be married and had been described as slender with red hair and a voice ever soft, gentle and low. She started working as a dial painter at the age of 17, but had dreams of becoming a teacher. Unfortunately, Peg never got a chance to fulfill her dreams. As we mentioned earlier, about a week after she left Radium Dial, she passed away due to radium poisoning.
Fucking hell.
Charlotte Nevin Purcell. Charlotte was born on the 27th of January, 1906. She was the youngest of 6 children. Charlotte was said to be devout in her religion and was said to have been very outspoken. If she thought it, she said it. Charlotte and her sister Eva used to work at the dime store with Marie before going to Radium Dial. They became close friends and kept in touch for the rest of their lives. When Charlotte left Radium Dial, she went on to become a seamstress. And at the age of 22, she married Albert Purcell and they had 3 children together. Her family described the couple as being best friends.
It's like me and you. Aren't we?
Yeah.
We're good buddies.
Best buds. Inez Corcoran Vallette. Inez was born on the 5th of February, 1907 to parents Mary and George Corcoran. On the 20th of October, 1926, at the age of 19, Mary married Vincent Vallette. Inez's story is a very important one for the fact that she was the first lead case in the Illinois lawsuit against Radium Dial. She died at the age of 29 after spending the best part of a decade dealing with the effects that radium poisoning had had on her health. Her husband would go on to remarry, but in the space of 2 years, Vincent had lost his wife, his mother, and his father.
Fucking hell.
And her husband, Vincent, he actually passed away on the 25th of February, the same day, 49 years apart from Inez. Mary Ellen Ella Cruz. Ella was born to parents Nellie and James Cruz. She had one sibling, a younger brother named John. Ella worked as a dial painter for 4 years. On the 4th of September, 1927, at the age of 24, Ella died. Ella's death was the first radium-related death suspected in Illinois. After her death, Ella's family filed a lawsuit against Radium Dial. It was the first lawsuit against Radium Dial outside of New Jersey. Catherine Wolfe Donahue. Catherine was born on the 4th of February, 1904. Catherine had 3 older brothers, John, Frank, and Edward. After Catherine's parents had died, she moved in with her aunt and her uncle. On the 23rd of January, 1932, Catherine married Tom Donahue. Catherine and Tom would go on to have 2 children, Tommy and Mary Jane. Catherine is one of the more well-known names of the Radium Girls for her strong and outspoken character throughout. Now, something that Catherine did was she created a scrapbook. Included in this scrapbook is newspaper clippings about the women, about their efforts to seek medical treatment as well as compensation. There's also some family photographs included. In 1992, were you about to say something?
No, I was just going to ask, is that scrapbook still about?
Yeah, so in 1992, her family actually donated it to the McCormick Library of Northwestern University, where it is now displayed. So, like we talked about earlier, there's probably thousands of people who were affected.
Yeah.
But these are a few of the women that we know, that we were kind of more in the public or more kind of like breakthrough cases, I suppose you'd say.
Because there's going to be so many what died of either, like they'll have it down as a sexually transmitted disease, cancer, and never linked it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are another couple of women I would like to mention. And they are May Keene and Mabel Williams. And these are some of the last Radium Girls. So May Keene. In 1924, May Keene took a job as a dial painter at the Waterbury Clock Company in Connecticut. And as with all the others, May was instructed to make a fine point with the brush. She recalled how she didn't like the taste and the texture of the paint. She described it as gritty and would not use the lip pointing technique. After only a few days, her boss actually approached her and asked if she would like to leave the job because she clearly was wasn't having it. She didn't enjoy the work. And May happily pieced the fuck out of there. Years later, May talked about that day and she said, "I often wish I had met him after to thank him, because I would have been just like the rest of them." May would go on to live a long life, but not without some struggles with her health. Dental problems, migraines, as well as two bouts of cancer. But it can't be said for sure if her work at the factory did contribute. May died on the 1st of March 2014 at the age of 107.
Okay, now.
I know. And Mabel Williams. Mabel was another dial painter who refused to lip point her brush. She always said that she never thought it was a good idea. You're fucking onto something, Mabel. Her brother Elmer remembered how when she got home, he could see the specks of radium glowing in her hair, which she would always go and wash it out.
Hmm.
In her later years, Mabel was said to be a big fan of basketball, particularly the Chicago Bulls and especially Michael Jordan. Mabel died in the...
Everyone were a massive fan of Michael Jordan.
But she was from Chicago, in fairness to her. Yeah, yeah. So, you leave Mabel alone. Mabel died on the 23rd of July, 2015, at the age of 104. Possibly the last of the Radium Girls. It's estimated that between 1917 and 1935, the number of workers was heading towards 10,000.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. In Illinois, there stands a life-size statue to memorialize the Radium Girls. And at Christmas, locals wrap her up in scarves to keep her warm through the winter. It's crazy as well, when you look at a picture of these women during their court date.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to be too whatever, but they are literally dying.
Yeah.
Yet, they're still there posing and smiling for photographs because...
Well, didn't they call themselves Living Dead?
Yeah, the Living Dead Society, Society of the Living Dead. But they're still there smiling because they fucking did. They were able to call out the injustices that they faced and their voices were finally heard.
But just to think, like, all the hard work they put in, and even though they won, they hadn't even put a dent in them companies.
Yeah.
Not even a dent.
Yeah. Like, it's so much work. I mean...
And then the cheeky fucks are trying to appeal it.
Yeah. It's fucking insane. But there you go. That's the story of the Radium Girls.
Yeah. I usually say thank you, but I'm not saying thank you for this one. Fucking hell. Fucking 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking rough. So, what oddity have you got for us?
Songs that were inspired by true stories.
Oh.
Mm. Jeremy by Pearl Jam. Do you know the story?
I don't know the artist.
I don't even know what you just said to me.
I don't know which is the song and which is the artist.
Jeremy is the song.
Okay.
Pearl Jam's the artist. So I'd say, apart from Neil, quite a few people will be familiar with this. It was a very popular song. So the story behind it was, on the 8th of January 1991, 15-year-old Jeremy Wade Dell entered his English class and shot himself in front of his teacher and 30 classmates.
What?
Mm. His mother has spoke about Jeremy stating that that day does not define his life. So I wonder how she feels about the song.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Do these artists... I wonder if they get in contact with the families and at least run it by them.
I say some do, some don't, you know. Smooth Criminal by Michael Jackson.
I've heard of that one.
Do you know what it is?
The song.
No, like what it's supposed to be based off of.
No.
So there are conflicting reports as to what the song is inspired by. Some have said it's about Al Capone. Others have said a CPR dummy, you know, because of the name Annie.
Okay.
But according to Michael's brother, Jerome, Michael was said to have been inspired to write Smooth Criminal after reading about the murder of a woman committed by Richard Ramirez. Jerome claims that this information was not made public at the time of the song's release as to not to offend anyone. And it was also right in the middle of the whole Satanic Panic era, so... Mm. I Don't Like Mondays by the Boomtown Rats.
Oh, I know what that one's going to be. Were it like a school shooter?
Yes. So on the 29th of January 1979, a 16-year-old girl committed a school shooting. And the reason she gave for the shooting was that she simply didn't like Mondays. I don't like
Mondays. Yeah, I don't know what that means.
I mean, she had a...
pretty hard backstory and all that. Like, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. We're definitely going to be covering it at some point, but yeah.
See, I like Mondays because it's a day off.
Yeah, but you remember when you were in school?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even just dislike Mondays. By Mondays, I was over it. Sundays, I was devastated.
Yeah, I don't know much about that case. I think that'll be an interesting one to cover. I want to know what the problem was with Mondays.
She didn't like them.
Thanks for that.
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.